Welcome to Shan's Healthcast for August 2007, brought to you by Shan's Healthcare. This Healthcast features a discussion about heart disease by Dr. Burton Silverstein, cardiologist at Cardiology Associates of Gainesville and clinical assistant professor for the University of Florida. Dr. Silverstein provides information about the latest advances in treating heart disease, tips to reduce your risk of a heart attack, and much more. Simply click on any of the links below to hear Dr. Silverstein address that particular question. Dr. Silverstein sees patients at the Shands AGH Heart Care Center in Gainesville, Florida. For more information about the Shands AGH Heart Care Center, call 352-733-0225 or visit shands.org. How prevalent is heart disease in women and men?
Women don't perceive how important heart disease is for them, and it's actually the number one killer of women in the United States and in countries that have a diet similar to the United States. And actually, a few years ago, the American Heart Association put on what's called a red dress campaign because women were not aware of how heart disease was their major cause of death and killing them, as opposed to breast cancer or uterine cancer or things that they had been aware of because of publicity-type campaigns. So there's been a big, big thrust to get women to become aware that heart disease is their number one killer, and not only that they need to do things to prevent the disease as well as to take medications after they've developed the disease. For men, most men know that heart disease is their number one killer and have been aware of it for a long period of time, although trying to change lifestyles is a difficult problem in getting people not to end up continuing to die of heart disease.
Are heart disease symptoms different in men and women?
Women tend to be more fatigued and more short of breath rather than getting the classic pressure sensation in the middle of their chest. They tend to get GI symptoms a little bit more, and because of that, they just sort of ignore it. They don't put themselves first a lot of times, and that they end up putting their families first and don't pay attention. But unfortunately, if they should get a heart attack or stroke, they can become disabled, not just not be with us. And so that can be very, very impactful, not only to their life, to the life of people around them. And so I think women need to become aware there are things they need to get help for, and then more importantly, there are things they need to do to prevent the problem in the first place. Men tend to be a little bit more aware of heart disease and tend to delay going to the emergency room because they tough it out a little bit more, but they usually get the classic description of pressure feeling in the middle of their chest that sometimes radiates up to their neck or down their arm, and difficulty in breathing, and they tend to go to the emergency room more than women, but on the other hand, they tend to get there, all people tend to get there a little bit late, and we can do a lot if you get there early. If you delay time, more and more of your heart is being damaged and can't be salvaged. And so if there is some suspicion, call the ambulance, go to the emergency room, maybe take some aspirin right away, chew a couple of baby aspirins before you go, and be assessed. There's no harm in being told there's not a problem. There's a big, big harm in ignoring a problem and not treating it really early.
What treatments are available if I'm experiencing symptoms of heart disease or a heart attack?
We've got a whole slew of ways of figuring out whether there's a problem or not. And the first thing that's the most important is to listen to you. So when you come into the doctor, you want to sort of explain what's bothering you and not be embarrassed to tell things, or because that's going to help us determine what we need to do next. And then we'll examine you and we'll listen for problems and we'll listen to your heart and see if there are heart murmurs and listen to your heart and examine how big or small your heart is and hear what's going on. And then we'll have some studies that everybody's aware of, something like an electrocardiogram and maybe some blood tests. And we can put that all together and figure out whether we need more information to get an answer. And it all depends. If you're, a young person like yourself and just worried about the problem, maybe just physical exam and EKG and listening to you is enough. Whereas if maybe you're 60 years old and you're having chest discomfort, that's when we need to go further. And that's what our group can do in our office, and sometimes we have to do in the hospital. And a lot of times there's something called a stress test where we have you walk on a conveyor belt and watch what you're doing and see what your EKG does. Or sometimes we scan your heart with a special X-ray kind of machine and see if it's getting enough blood flow, or look at it with sonar like you look at babies and see how well it's squeezing, and gives us a better answer of not what you're doing at rest, which could be very safe and okay, but what happens when you got to get that engine to rev up? Are those fuel lines open? Can you get enough fuel and oxygen down there to make it work properly? Or is there some indication by this testing that those few lines are clogged up with cholesterol and could lead to future problems. And so those are the basic tests that we do. There are some more, much more sophisticated tests. Sometimes we have to go on to something called a heart catheterization, where we put a tube in your leg and feed it up into your heart and get direct pictures about what's going on and see what's opened and closed and be able to tell, for example, if the stress test says there could be a problem, then maybe the catheterization would tell us how definitive that problem is. And so, and again, people are afraid of these tests a little bit, but as technology has gotten a lot better, not only in video games but also in cardiology, it's can be done relatively safely with maybe less than a 0.5% to 1% risk, 99% chance that things will be fine, and we can get you a definitive answer with a catheterization. I venture to say, as I tell patients, if I gave you a 99% chance of winning a lottery ticket tomorrow, you'd go out and buy that ticket. And so here it's the same kind of thing. It's not necessarily to be afraid of what's going to happen, but realize that we're in a partnership. We're trying to help you get yourself better. We're not out to help ourselves. We're out to help you. And we have to determine with all this equipment what's the best way to go. And, our office and other, the university itself has many forms of equipment, more and more sophisticated, to try to determine what's going on.
What is the difference between angina and a heart attack?
I think sometimes people get confused as to what angina is and what a heart attack is or what chest pains are. And the way I try to explain it to patients is, if I took my hands and started choking you, you would feel kind of uncomfortable. If I let go soon enough and I came back a few minutes later and asked you how you're doing, you'd probably say fine. So if the heart's arteries get choked and don't get enough blood flow, then your heart hurts. You get this pressure sensation, or women just get a little bit of shortness of breath. That is angina. If that persists and the heart is choked for a long enough period of time, then that's a heart attack or a myocardial infarction. And then the muscle, or the engine, as we describe it, is now being damaged. And even though you open the fuel lines to the engine, if it's damaged too much, there's no way it's going to work. And so that's why it's really important to get there early, take the aspirin, but more importantly, prevent the problem in the first place. If that persists, that feeling persists for more than 20 minutes usually, then there's cell death and a heart attack, and that is a much more serious problem. Angina is basically the warning sign, your mind and your body telling you, slow down here, stop the engine, or slow down the engine. It's enough fuel if you don't keep pushing it, but if you keep pushing it, you're going to get into trouble. Now, if it's a heart attack with a ruptured artery and the blood flow is completely blocked, then no matter what you do, there's not enough blood flow, and that's going to continue to give you pain, which is why you need to go to the emergency room.
Can heart damage be repaired?
Yes, it can be repaired. I mean, it depends how much damage there is. It also depends on how much what we call collateral flow, or your own little branches that you've developed in there. It depends how early you get there. It depends whether it's a permanent clot blockage or whether the clot dissolves a little bit and then you get some food and energy where it needs to be and then it clots again and it stops. So that's called a stuttering course. So it all depends on how permanent the obstruction is and how soon we open it, either with drug therapy or with something called balloon angioplasty.
What are the risk factors for heart disease or a heart attack?
Things that we know that combined can lead to a lot of heart disease and a lot of trouble, not only heart attacks, but strokes as well. And so that has to do with monitoring your blood pressure, knowing what your blood pressure is, and having your family doctor make sure that it's under the appropriate numbers and that you take medications if you need it, watching your cholesterol, making sure that your good and bad cholesterol are in the proper ranges, making sure you eat the right foods. And I'm sure people are aware that trans fats are really out right now and cause a lot of heart disease, and New York City's even banned them from the restaurants. And so watching what you eat, especially when you eat out, because there are a lot of bad things that are hidden in those foods, and also making sure you exercise every day, and walking just 30 minutes, 5 days a week, can prevent heart disease in the future. So those kind of things, and if you do have diabetes, making sure you take care of diabetes, all those are risk factors that we need to take care of. The one I haven't hit on yet, which is probably the hardest one for some people to take care of, but is a big factor, is cigarette smoking. And clearly not smoking is a lot better, not only for your lungs, but for your heart and your legs, than smoking. And fortunately now, there are a lot of new medications that are out there that can help people not smoke, and there are groups that can help people not smoke. So these are a lot of restrictions that people don't like to put on their life, but if you have a heart attack or stroke, you're going to be very, very restricted, and then there's no taking it back.
Does stress play a role in developing heart disease?
when we're in this chronic pressure mode of not being able to control our lives, with having everything happen around us, we put out hormones that are not necessarily beneficial. And so, you know, maybe that walking 30 minutes a day calms you down. Maybe going off into a corner and meditating or doing yoga or sitting and listening to some music that's calming as opposed to some music that may be just too much noise. That may help you. But I don't think, and stress can be good. Stress gets you to work here. Stress gets me up at 5 o'clock in the morning. And stress gets people to be productive. It's when it crosses into distress that it becomes a problem. And, you know, that there are multiple factors that affect that. But anything you can do to make it better, and not smoking not being one of those things, because a lot of people do smoke for stress reasons. Anything you can do that's healthy to remove that stress will help protect you from future problems.
Does diabetes have anything to do with heart disease?
Diabetes has everything to do with heart disease. Actually, 2/3 to 3/4 of all diabetics die of a heart attack or stroke. Diabetes is a disease of your whole body, and that extra sugar that eventually comes to be manifest, which is how people pick up the disease, has been going on for 10, 15, 20 years in terms of hurting your vasculature, your blood vessels in your heart before the sugars get elevated. So typically what happens is that if you're pre-diabetic, you put out a lot of insulin from your pancreas to overcome that problem. So your sugars don't go up because you can make enough insulin to lower them down, but there's resistance to that insulin throughout your entire body because the extra weight that you're carrying, that is not something that just looks bad. That's not something that just cushions you from a fall. That's actually an active endocrine organ, and it ends up producing hormones that are very, very, very detrimental. And over time, 15 or 20 years, those hormones destroy your blood vessels in your heart. So by the time your pancreas is so weak it can't make enough insulin and your sugars start going, we're almost too late. And so that's why this diabetes is such a risk factor, because you've actually had damage to your whole body for 15 or 20 years before your sugar goes up. But more importantly, we know that if we can stop this problem before it gets to the point that your sugars go up, we can prevent that heart attack and stroke. And in fact, when they've looked at it, the best treatment for diabetes is weight reduction and exercise. It lowers it more than any medicine we have out there, more than insulin or anything else. Exercise and weight reduction make the difference.
Is there a link between genetics and heart disease?
Genetics has a lot to do with it. I mean, I think if your mom or dad died in their 40s and then you're getting to be 38, you need to start worrying about it, because those genes can be bad, and certainly there are certain diseases that are definitely inherited, especially sudden death. If you have a family history of men dying before the age of 55, women dying before the age of 65, that to us is considered early death. And if it's sudden early death, that definitely would be a genetic predisposition, and you need to be aware of that. Genetics play a role, but more importantly, environment, blood pressure, diabetes, cholesterol, eating, all those things play just as much, if not more, of a role.
Why do some women not fully appreciate their risk for heart disease?
They tend to have more shortness of breath, maybe some type of fatigue or generalized discomfort in their chest, and they don't complain as much as men, and so they wouldn't go to the ER as much. And then when they would get there, I don't think doctors were fully aware that they were different in the way they would present. And so it's an awareness not only for people, but it's also awareness for physicians to realize that heart disease is a big, big problem for women.
Is hormone therapy a safe way to treat heart disease in women?
Right now, we're not recommending hormone therapy for women to prevent heart disease. Now, if you need hormone therapy because you have postmenopausal symptoms of hot flashes or similar problems, then they need to talk to their family doctor or their gynecologist to find out if it's a good idea. But in terms of preventing heart disease, that's not a recommendation. On the other hand, if you started it for that problem, we don't really feel, especially if you started early for those perimenopausal problems, that it ends up increasing the risk of heart disease.
Should you take aspirin to prevent heart disease?
Everything in life, there's good and there's bad. So if everybody in the United States took an aspirin starting tomorrow, we'd have people that had upset stomachs. We'd have people that might bleed from their stomach. We'd have people that might bleed in their head and get a stroke. Because even though the risk is, maybe less than 0.5%, you'd give it to 240 million, 300 million people, you're going to get into trouble. But if we can target it at the people where the benefit is much, much better than the risk, then it is appropriate. And in general, for men, it's always appropriate. For women, it depends on what their age is. In terms of preventing the problem. Now, once you've had a heart attack or stroke, then aspirin is a definite cheap way to prevent it from happening again.
Thank you for listening to Shan's HealthCast. Shan's Healthcare will continue to provide healthcasts covering a wide variety of general health issues. If you would like to subscribe to Shan's HealthCast or would like more information on this or other topics, please visit shans.org/healthcast. Shan's Healthcare is a private, not-for-profit healthcare system affiliated with the University of Florida. Shan's includes 8 hospitals, a network of more than 80 primary and specialty clinical practices, and a medical staff of more than 1,500 UF faculty and community physicians. UF and Shan's, the science of hope.